Hey, everybody out there. Happy Monday. We are glad to be back. This is In Context, WPKN's live public affairs call-in show. My name is Gus Cantavero. I'm here with my co-host, Ken McDermott Rowe, and behind the board is Marchand. He is our board operator slash military affairs commentator. And we are glad to be back. Last week we were fundraising, and if anybody out there is wondering why there wasn't a podcast, it's because we don't podcast the fundraising shows. We are on every Monday, except the first Monday of the month from noon to 1 p.m. And the websites are incontextreport.com, and you can find us on YouTube at youtube.com/incontextreport, and you can find us on Facebook as well by going to Facebook and just typing into the search engine In Context Report, and you should be able to find us pretty quickly there. And like us there, and then you'll be able to get updates on show news when we put up the podcast, upcoming shows, topics, and any kind of articles or headlines that we find interesting and want to share, or original reports that we write for the blog.
And we want to thank everybody who participated by contributing during our fundraiser over the last 3 weeks, WPKN. As you know, we bring you sounds, we bring you information, programs like In Context, and we can bring you music that you can't hear in other media, especially the corporate media. And we're able to do that because of your generous support. So thank you for calling in. And if you haven't called in, you can still go to WPKN.org and make a tax-deductible pledge to support the station. So thanks again for your help. We want to note that Gus and Marchand and I are going to be appearing at the Ridgefield Community Center on Wednesday, June the 27th at 7:30 p.m. There's going to be a free performance of my one-act play, Mark Twain versus the Imperialists. And after the play, Gus, Marchand, and I are going to participate with the audience in a discussion of U.S. foreign policy, how Mark Twain's political views relate to our current situation. And there's a very important body of essays and political work that Mark Twain engaged in the last 10 years of his life that's not very well known, which is why I wrote the play. It's based upon his writings, and Mark Twain was very concerned about the beginning of American imperialism. He living at the turn of the century. He saw the beginning of American imperialism with the Spanish-American War, and then with the brutal American repression of the Philippine insurrection. He also was seeing the beginning of the takeover of our government by the big money interest, what he called the big money interest, the big banks. And he was very concerned about the effect of imperialism and on the bank takeover our government, the long-term effects on our democracy. So we're going to listen to the play together with the and then we're going to have a discussion about these issues with the audience. And again, that's at the Ridgefield Community Center. It's free admission, and there are going to be free refreshments available before and after the play on Wednesday, June the 27th at 7:30 p.m. And we'd like to do start with a news roundup. One of the most important stories, and one of the ones we're going to focus on in great detail next week on the War Report, is Syria. And the latest news coming out, including that Russians are shipping more equipment to the Syrians to resist the uprising there. So, Marchand, could you briefly talk about that, and then we'll move on to some other stories?
Absolutely. The situation in Syria is very rapidly spiraling down towards not just a war like the last Gulf War, the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq, but it is spinning out into a major world war. Russia, the U.S. seems to be on a collision course with Syria. Russia's response, because they support the Syrian regime, we support the rebels, they support the regime. The Russians have not only been shipping weapons, very sophisticated surface-to-air missile systems like the S-300 and the S-400 to Syria, but they've also been shipping in elite police counterterrorism units, and now the latest news is they're shipping in elite Navy Spetsnaz, elite Navy commandos, Navy special forces to Syria. And these ships, originally the Russians denied sending the ships. Today, an article in Russia Today, Russia has announced that it is officially sending the ships. They denied this yesterday. The Israelis reported that they were sending troops. The Russians admit today that they are sending troops to Syria, nominally to protect their port. As a military analyst, I highly doubt that they're going there just to protect the Russian port of Tartus.
So we might say that we're in like something like the 22nd year of American military expansion since the end of the Cold War. It began with the Persian Gulf War in 1991, and we've taken over a lot of countries, but it seems like it's coming to a new stage with potentially a direct conflict with Russia in Syria. So we're going to watch that very carefully, and we're going to talk about it in great detail about this build-up to a larger confrontation situation, and we're going to talk in detail also about what's really going on in Syria, which is not being conveyed very accurately through the corporate media. Now, in other news, of course, there was a huge vote, a hugely important vote in Greece yesterday on for a new government. The new Democracy Party won. And this party is pledged to try to work with the European Central Bank, the IMF, the European Union, to try to continue the bailout of Greece, which, of course, also means that the new government will have to work with the troika, in terms of imposing new austerity programs, cutting back the Greek public sector. So the Greek voters were left with a choice between bad and worse, had to make some decision, and for the moment, they're going to stay in the euro, they're going to take the bad medicine. This crisis isn't going to go away. It's going to last for years. Angela Merkel, who's the Chancellor of Germany, said it's going to take years to solve this crisis, and it's really going to affect the United States very greatly. If the European Union were to break up,
I think it's very worth noting that in Greece right now, the largest growing party, of which Russia Today actually cited over half of police officers belong to, is the Golden Dawn Party, which is a right-wing ultra-nationalist party. But it's almost a slingshot response to the European Union, going from one extreme of internationalism to another extreme of ultra-nationalism.
This is a very dangerous time for Europe. As Marchand said, we're going to see more nationalist movements. If the European Union were to break up, it would have a very dire effect on our own economy. We have such intimate banking and trade relations with them.
The nationalist response is a natural response to all outward crises. I mean, that's basically what the Tea Party here in the United States is.
Sure.
It's a nationalist party that wants protectionist legislation to prevent the outsourcing of jobs, illegal immigration, to prevent the lowering of wages and the cutting of ties with foreign nations economically and militarily.
They're faced with a really tough decision because it looks like their standard of living, which shot up in recent years in Greece and in many other European countries, is on its way down regardless of what they do. There was an interesting piece I saw on the BBC where the owner of a grocery store in Greece was taking the reporter through, showing all the items on his shelf that were imported. And he said, if we go off the euro, my customers won't be able to afford any of this.
But
so there's going to be a real collapse in demand.
But that breeds a nationalist response because no people, we take a very American look when we look at the euro. We think, oh, well, they're all Europeans. They're all alike. You know, they should all get along together. But each of these countries has a very strong national identity, particularly the Greeks. I've had the pleasure of knowing many Greeks in my time, and they are very Greek. They are very certain that they are Greek. And a lot of that stems from their history. I mean, they were under Ottoman rule for how many decades? And it never broke their identity of being Greek. So if anybody's likely to have a nationalist response, it is going to be the Greeks especially.
And there was talk of how the Greeks are lazy. You know, remember that last year when the Greek sovereign debt crisis was coming along? They're saying, well, the
right.
Greeks are very lazy. They don't like to work hard.
Yeah.
They don't like to pay taxes, things like that.
I've heard that before.
Yeah. I heard another statistic after I heard that one, putting it into perspective. The Greeks work the second most hours per person per year in all of Europe.
Is that right? And if you see the way Greek Americans hustle,
they work really hard.
They are.
If you've ever met a Greek deli owner or pizzeria owner, they are there from open to close 7 days a week. They work really hard. They understand what it takes to sacrifice to build up a business.
But I think they're caught up in the same bubble or similar bubble to what Americans are caught up in. And this was, you know, this banking engineered rapid rise in real estate and
designed by private banks, mind you.
Right. The bankers were making a lot of money off this deal, and everybody has gotten, I mean, the average person gets overextended, and when the bubble burst, you know,
it's impossible to pay back.
Now,
if I can see a pattern here, because we're talking bankers, the same people that make money off of funding both sides in any given major war also happen to be making money off of economic collapses that fundamentally screw the average citizen. So there's a pattern I see here. Well, let me. These bankers don't care about us.
A little personal anecdote. A lady I know, 93 years old, got in the mail from the Bank of America. She has a Bank of America credit card. A notice which says, "Enjoy a low 0% promotional APR by using the enclosed checks."
I like how you wrote that down too.
"These checks can be a great financial tool to help you pay down your balances faster. When the promotional offer expires, these balances will be charged at a variable rate, currently 15.99%.
Very reasonable.
Very reasonable. Well, isn't this is usury? I mean, I used to practice law, and when I started practicing law, it was against the law. Only mm-hmm. the mafia charged something like this.
The whole idea is obviously, I don't have to say this out loud, we all understand, is that you'll forget to pay it back quickly, or you'll just let it lapse because it's 0%, and you'll get to that 12th month or 13th month or 7th month, whatever the terms are, and all of a sudden they make their money back right away in one sitting.
That's right.
And I think, you know, one thing that's interesting is, you know, capitalism by itself is not inherently bad, but unbridled, this kind of what I like to call ultra-capitalism, where there is no restraint on the banks.
Forget capitalism. It's scamming.
It's scamming. But that's what I mean. There is no restraint. I mean, the mob couldn't do this to you, but suddenly it's okay for corporations to do it to you. And heaven forbid you say that there should be any restrictions on the corporations. And then the banking industry, the banker-backed media will say that you're a communist all
no,
of a
but
sudden.
What they'll do is they'll say, we need regulations, and then Chase Manhattan Bank will write the regulations, and then your local Connecticut Bank, Fairfield County Bank, whatever, they have to undergo a whole overhaul in order to prevent, derivatives fraud.
Right.
But then Chase Manhattan Bank gets a loophole because they're the cornerstone of the economy. They get to keep doing whatever the hell they want.
And there's only really a few banks that are really running this the whole shebang.
Absolutely.
But you got JPMorgan Chase, Bank of America, Citicorp, a couple of
Wells Fargo.
Wells Fargo. And that's about it. And of course, on the traditional investment banking side, Goldman Sachs.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's interesting now that there really is no division anymore. It used to be you could tell the investment banks from the commercial banks, but since Clinton, and this is a bipartisan created problem, Clinton eliminated the Glass-Steagall Act, which since the 30s had separated the Goldman Sachs from the savings and banks that you and I keep our checking accounts in. They eliminated that, mm-hmm. and now Bank of America owns Merrill Lynch. Mm-hmm. I mean, so the money's going here and it's going there, and it's basically our money that's going.
And you have now an international scam where instead of it being just here in the United States or locally in your state, where they offer loans at usury rates, now we're offering usury rates to third world, second world countries in order to knock them down and grab their infrastructure. We used to do this to South America all the time. Now Germany is the strongest bank and the only solvent country in Europe, and they're offering loans to all the other countries in Europe, but for collateral they want them to put up all the gold that they have in reserve.
I see.
They're offering this at rates that they know the countries can't pay back because Greece has no money. So they'll take the loan because they need it today in order to keep their country afloat. So they'll take that loan from Germany, put up whatever gold they have as collateral. Germany knows that within a year they'll default, and then they'll get all their gold, which is their power play.
So they're going to end up losing control over a lot of their base. They're probably their ports. Mm-hmm. I understand the Chinese already bought. Have they bought the Athens port, Piraeus?
I'm unaware of that.
I think so.
I know the Chinese and even the Emirates have bought most of our ports. Over 70% of all U.S. ports are foreign owned, which is why
comforting.
Which is why the whole principle of the Coast Guard is smaller than the New York City Police Department, and part of that is because the Coast Guard traditionally had to search all of the cargo coming into the U.S. Well, if they come into a Chinese or Emirate or Gulf nation owned port, then they don't go through the same screening. In fact, they don't go through any screening.
Are you saying that airport security is a farce because they can ship whatever they want into our ports?
You know, I hate to break it to you, Gus, but I think that's what we're coming
across. Granny's toothpaste tube that they are searching is not really that big of a deal because they can bring tanks into Los Angeles?
Well, why would they do that? Al-Qaeda could simply, go through a very complex chemical process of uh-huh. putting nitroglycerin in toothpaste tubes and instead of course, going bypass security. That wouldn't be any fun.
And, of course, as you guys are suggesting, all of this airport frisking and stuff is really not about security. It's about getting us used to giving up our rights to the government.
And if anybody out there wants to contribute to the conversation, please send us an email to ken@mdrtalk.org. ken@mdrtalk.org, and we will relay your comments here on the air.
And our phone number is 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. If you want to join the conversation. And if you just joined the show, it's In Context. We're on every Monday from 12 to 1, except the first Monday of the month. It's a live political affairs call-in show on WPKN 89.5 FM, and we're streaming at WPKN.org.
Yeah, you want to bring that up? I always get really suspicious when we get phone calls before we give out the phone number, and the phone was already ringing a second ago. All right,
very
yeah,
anxious.
That's okay. I let it go.
As long as it's not Bank of America.
Bank of America or the FBI will be okay.
Well, you know, I would like to ask how much we're always blaming the banks, and I think they're manipulating the system, lining their pockets at our expense. But to what extent does the average person, the average voter, bear responsibility for the fix we're in? After all, we're running a deficit of almost $1.5 trillion. We spend, as a federal level, about $2 for every dollar we take in. Now,
that sounds sustainable.
We elect people who vote for that. We know what's going on, mm-hmm. and any common sense tells you that this is going to lead to disaster.
Well, try to run your house like that.
Yeah,
what
of
happens?
Course not. So we as voters, we bear a large responsibility for this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess so, but I hate to admit it, but we do. We definitely do.
And this is just not sustainable.
I mean, people elect people who just look the part, and they talk about freebies, and they say that you deserve public services, but you shouldn't have to pay for them. Or at least maybe the rich guy down the street should have to pay for it.
Yeah.
And that is not only un-American, but it's uneconomically sound. It just doesn't make sense. It's not really sustainable in the long run. Just to make someone else who has some means pay for essentially giveaways or services to the lower income citizens, which sounds nice, but it just doesn't work, because then what happens? That person who's the business owner, who you think is rich, really isn't rich, will take his business elsewhere.
Well,
he'll move to a state that is less economically strict, or to another country that is more forgiving.
And how much do people often scam the system? Well, meanwhile, you know, working class and even lower income people can't afford health care. I mean, that's the absurdity of a lot of the services that our society provides. We take care of the really rich, mm-hmm. we take care of the really poor, and then everyone in that middle portion gets screwed.
Well, we really need some balance to the economy rather than stricter regulations. I mean, what do they want to do with the minimum wage? Have you heard the legislation? They want to raise the minimum wage to $8.50 an hour, or $8.25 an hour.
Wow.
Up from $7.25 an hour.
That's still nothing.
That's nothing. That's not even enough.
No.
We listened to a story on the radio. They interviewed a guy who was a security guard at Newark Airport, and he makes $7.50 an hour, or $8 an hour. $8 an hour.
That comes out to like $14,000-$15,000 a year.
He says he has enough money to pay his rent and his cell phone bill.
That's it.
Yeah. So he has to then take, I guess, public assistance for food. I mean, and that's a security guard. That sounds like someone to me who is probably more preoccupied with his crossword puzzle than actually keeping the airport
safe. He actually made less than I did as a dishwasher. Mind you, I only made $8 an hour as a dishwasher.
And this is in the tri-state area, and you were in Ohio.
I was in Toledo.
So there's a big difference there. You were actually doing much better than this guy.
But the fact is, though, is the reason why they can get away with paying people so little is because there's such a high demand for jobs. I mean, I remember when I was out in Ohio, if I couldn't, you know, I called in sick with the flu once. I was working 6 days a week. I called in sick with the flu once, and my boss basically cut my hours.
And that was in a restaurant where the last place you should be is around food when you're sick, right?
Oh, gosh. All the health violations that I saw in those places.
Oh, my gosh.
It's mind-bending. You know, you go out to eat, you think, oh, well, people take care of the food. Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Well, there was an election in France also over the weekend, and President Hollande's party, the Socialist Parties, won a strong endorsement there. Mm-hmm. And he's bringing another perspective, which relates to what you're talking to now. He says, we can't get our way out of this depression simply by cutting. He said, we're going to have to invest. We're going to have to spend money mm-hmm. to create jobs.
And how is he going to raise that money?
I don't know.
He's going to raise taxes.
I guess he'll have to raise taxes. But I think it's a point as well taken, is that you cannot get yourself out of a depression simply by cutting. You've got to start to invest in things I think we need to follow that lesson here. We need to invest in stuff.
I don't like the way he's going to do it because he's going to raise the top tax bracket to 75%, and you're going to see the wealth fly out of that country.
I'm not endorsing the particulars. I'm just saying that the idea is that we have to create decent paying jobs, and we're not going to get there just by cutting. And what we need to do in America, and this is a theme we've mentioned many times in our show, is we have to shut down the American empire. We can't afford to be building bridges and dropping and flying drones in foreign countries.
No.
You know, when our economy here is falling apart, when people can't find jobs.
And the fact is that, you know, trying to build an empire on the cheap is actually more dangerous than if we, you know, had this massive defense budget. General Martin Dempsey, the chief of staff, head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, gave a report to the Senate Armed Services Committee, and he said that if we continue cutting the size of our force, and, you know, implying we continue with our military adventurism, and we continue cutting the size of our force, we're inviting somebody to take a stab at us.
Ooh.
Because we are so overstretched.
Oh, yeah.
And our economy is fundamentally in a very bad way. So if we entered into a major conflict, our enemies know we can't sustain it.
You know,
our enemies know we can't produce the armaments necessary. And so by continuing this military adventurism and cutting the size of our military and letting our economy slide, all of it is a very bad combination leading up to disaster.
That sounds like a threat to me, though, what he's saying. It sounds like, you know, I'd hate to see a fire break out in a restaurant.
to an extent, but this guy's like never criticized the administration.
Yeah, Dempsey's pretty much
he's a complete yes man.
Yeah,
so when this guy comes out and
he's
criticizes,
no Patton,
I'm like,
yeah.
you know.
Okay.
Well, with this path we're going down is a well-trod one, and it was documented by Paul Kennedy, as a Yale professor of history, and a classic book, The Rise and Fall of the Great Powers. And so we can see what's happening now. It's happened to Spain. It happened to Britain. It happened to every empire. That you overextend yourself militarily. You transfer your assets all too much to war, and your real economy rots from within. And then eventually, when you're defeated on the battlefield, it's merely confirming the fact that you've already become a second-rate nation economically. And that's we're going down the same path.
And the only way your country can survive this sort of decline is to end its military adventurism and begin investing at home.
Exactly. And the sooner we learn this lesson from history, the better. If you'd like to join our conversation, give us a ring at 203-336-9756 or drop us an email at ken@mdrtalk.org. That phone number, guys, 203-336-9756. We'd like to hear your thoughts about any of the issues we've been talking about the economy. Are you out of work, looking for a job? What do you think can be done to turn things around in Fairfield County and the nation at large so that you and your friends can have a chance not just to get a job, but to get a job that'll actually pay you a decent salary?
Yeah, more than $8.50 an hour, which is like pennies. I mean, if they do increase the minimum wage to $8.50, I was thinking, what is another, what would that be?
75 cents, something like that.
But he was making $8, so another $4 a day.
$4 a day, so that's that's less than $1,000 a year.
$20 a week he's going to make more?
Okay, $1,000 a year, and it's nothing. And when you look at the cost of health care, and it seems like there's a consensus. We talk about how the American people keep voting for people who then saddle us with these huge deficits and this ever-rising national debt. But there seems to be a consensus really on both sides of the aisle. And I think it started with Reagan, with these huge deficits under a supposedly conservative Republican. And basically Reagan said, forget about the deficits. Supply-side economics is going to work out. So the Republicans say, forget about it. You know, they pay lip service to cutting it. But actually what they're really concerned about is cutting a high marginal tax rates for rich people,
mm-hmm.
and deregulating the banks so they can play and make all the money they want. And then the rest of it is just, I think, mouthing platitudes about balanced budgets.
Well, they're only actually following through with their own advice in very limited areas.
Yeah.
You know, they're liars. Because they talk about deregulating, they talk about corporate giveaways and all sort of stuff. But then on the other hand, they give the corporate giveaways to the coal industry, to the military industrial complex,
right,
to the energy industry, to the bankers. So they are playing their own game there. So most Republicans are really just rhinos, Republican in name only, and they're just the flip side to the limousine liberal.
That's right.
So they aren't conservative. So I want people to get that straight when they talk about the Republicans and the Democrats. They're both liars, and they're both wanting the exact same thing, which is government money being given to private industry.
So they both have a vested interest in continuing the status quo.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And the only person in this election cycle came out with the concrete plan to balance the budget, he put out its proposed budget, was Ron Paul, who is now, for all intents and purposes, out of the race. But he put it out in black and white and said, this is how I'll do it. And he'd wind down the war. He closed down things like the Department of Education. I think one thing I found missing from his plan was, how are you going to restore growth? And I think that's a very important component of the idea of building infrastructure. And I would take inspiration from Republicans like Abraham Lincoln and President Eisenhower, who's championed great public works programs that infrastructure improvements that led to really great progress
for
the American economy.
And just look at the legacy of history. I mean, you know, you look at nations coming out of great depressions. I mean, whether it was Italy coming out of World War I or Germany coming out of the Great Depression or even Japan coming out of World War II, what brought these economies up? What brought them all down was war, but yeah, unnecessary military adventurism. But what brought them all back was public works, building the Autobahn, building, you know, restoring the Roman forums, you know, building these massive skyscrapers and highway systems and byway systems in Japan, and building the bullet train and everything. These were what restored these nations' economies.
That's right.
And then what's destroyed them was speculation and military adventurism.
That's
those
right.
are the two things that both destroyed the Japanese economy, the German economy, and the Italian economy.
The question is, how long does it take before we learn this lesson? Do we have to get badly beaten by the Russians and the Chinese in a war? Do we have to have our economy totally tanked out before
you
it sinks into our heads?
You have to have people lose faith in the two ruling parties. Because people always ask me, they say, well, if we don't, you know, we have Democrats and Republicans, but if we don't choose one of them, what do we do? They're third party. Create a third party or vote for a third party. Vote for anyone other than what the mainstream is telling you. We nominally still have a democracy. If everybody went out and voted for Ron Paul, Ron Paul would have been the nominee. But people say, well, I have to go with the mainstream because, well, he's been ordained by the holy CNN and Fox News.
Yeah.
And so it's what it will require is people losing faith in those two institutions that they can actually go and vote with an independent mind.
And this year, Gary Johnson is going to be the Libertarian Party candidate. He was early in the runnings for the Republican nominee, and I think he's a solid candidate.
Tell us about Gary Johnson. What state is he from?
Gary Johnson is a former governor of New Mexico. He was, I believe, a two-term governor, and he was had a successful run as the governor there. And it was a successful couple terms. He was well-liked. He is a strict libertarian in that he follows all the principles of non-intervention and do as you want others to do to you and do not do harm to others, basically the golden rule.
So he's against the war?
He's completely against the wars. He would withdraw immediately. He is for strong national defense, but against foreign interventionism. He has a lot of viewpoints about government agencies and things like public services.
He probably wants to get rid of the Department of Education.
Yes. But, yeah. And, I mean, he's even against things like speed limits and stoplights sometimes.
I think he's for also ending the drug war, right?
Very much so, yes. He has strong opinions on the drug war, being that he's from a border state. And that's something that I have a lot of strong opinions on as well. He's definitely for legalizing marijuana. And I believe that from there it kind of, you know, gets muddy, because when you start talking about heroin and cocaine and things like that, I don't think you want to legalize that overnight.
Yeah.
You may want to take that as it goes, but at least you end the drug wars overnight and you collapse the narco states by legalizing marijuana. And as you know, people don't know it, it's a dirty secret, but a lot of the big banks actually stay afloat by laundering cash from the drug war.
Sure. This is how the status quo is continued.
Wachovia,
a lot of people making money from it.
Yeah, Wachovia actually laundered tens of billions of dollars from just marijuana and cocaine sales.
Well, that's the reason why border security is so weak. I mean,
and they were fined a couple hundred million, by the way. So it was chunk change compared to what
they actually made.
And that's why border security is so weak. I mean, I've been up on the border myself before, and it's, you know, it's laughable when you look at how open it is. There may be a fence. There might be a knee-high wall at some point. I mean, it's like that Rowan Atkinson shtick where he's like at Hadrian's Wall and the thing's only like 3 foot high. And he's like, this is how we're going to stop the barbarian hordes, by building a 3 foot high wall, a terrifying obstacle, almost as dangerous as a bunny with the word boo painted on its nose. And it's, you know, it's an absurdity because if we were really interested in stopping narco-terrorism, if we were really interested in protecting the border, we would have done what any other state would have done. We would have militarized the border. We would have put up minefields, barbed wire. I mean, that's going to an extreme, but that's, you know, we could, if we actually wanted to stop it, but we don't.
You can't get a Cuban cigar, right?
You can, oh, no, heaven forbid you get a Cuban cigar.
Ron Paul's opinion on the border fence was, sure, you want to stop people from coming into the country, put up barbed wire fences and machine gun nests. That'll do the trick. Do you really want to do that, though? Is that the kind of country you want to live in? He said, don't forget that those machine gun nests, not only do they keep people out, but they keep you in.
Yeah.
And if bad economic times come, people want to flee with their money. And don't forget, you're going to be stuck here, too. So keep that in mind. I'm not for fences, but I think if you turn off the economic magnet so that people can't work illegally, then there won't be a reason for them to come here. And I don't mean get rid of cash. That's not what I'm talking about.
What do both of you think of Obama's new policy to apparently give work permits to young people in this country who came here before they were 16. I think you have to be under 30 and have come here before 16.
How do you
get a work permit and you won't be subject to deportation.
Hey, look, if Congress voted on this, fine. Obama did this unilaterally. I have a big problem with that. This is an executive order, and it's called policy, which is not law, by the way. Policy is nothing more than just directives given to agents as to what to enforce. This is policy given from the divine right of kings, leadership that we have, ruling from on high, telling us which laws to enforce and which ones not to enforce.
Romney, interestingly, was on the news show, I think it was Meet the Press, and didn't oppose it.
He's just
in favor of it, because what it's all about in the end.
But it's an end around, it's wrong.
Well, what it's all about in the end is it's about divide and conquer. It's about how can we split the American people. Because one of the things I noticed is that in any other country on the planet, you know, people always complain that if you think English should be the spoken language of the United States, you're a right-wing nut. Well, the fact is, in any other country you go to, and I've traveled all over the world, nobody humors me by using English everywhere I go. And I don't expect them to use English. I expect that wherever I travel, I have to speak the language of the people who live there. Mm-hmm. And if I emigrated there, I would be expected to learn that language. The reason why they're laxing the immigration laws, part of it is because they want to eventually eliminate the border with Mexico and Canada. The North American Union mm-hmm. is the eventual goal, you know. So this is just one step towards that. Now, how do you prove? Did you come here before you were 16? If they're illegal, they have no birth records here. Mexico is in chaos. So, I mean, you're talking about getting anything.
How many
from
Major
there.
League Baseball players have been found to actually be 5 years older than they claim to be?
Exactly.
Mean,
it's absolutely absurd. But that's the reason, though. That is the whole reason. The fact that, and also that they want to give them driver's license. Well, when you go to vote, and I think this is a key factor, when you go to vote, they don't ask for your birth certificate. They don't ask for any proof of citizenship. All they want to see is a driver's license and an address.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I think the powers that be in this country have decided that this is the first step in eliminating the border and eliminating the American national identity.
Well, look, this is a play for votes. Obama wants the Latino vote, which is the fastest growing demographic in the country.
62% of California is Hispanic.
And Romney wants a good portion of that.
Yeah.
So, of course, he's not going to say it's bad, you know?
Sure.
And the white Republicans are still going to vote for Romney because they have to support the party. And it doesn't matter what Romney says from here on.
Do you think that Gary Johnson is going to get any traction with the Ron Paul wing of the Republican Party?
I think that a significant portion of the Ron Paul supporters are going to vote for Gary Johnson. Just because Rand Paul came out and said that he's going to, you know, kiss the Republican Party's behind end doesn't mean that the supporters are going to follow suit.
For those that don't know, Rand Paul is the son of Ron Paul, and he's a senator from Kentucky,
mm-hmm.
and very much identified with his views. So it came as a somewhat of a disappointment to Ron Paul's supporters when he endorsed Romney.
Ron did not endorse Romney and will not endorse Romney, and Rand did because he wants to be president. And he's going to run for president in 4 years, and no one's saying this publicly. This is my personal opinion. And in order for him to continue the massive momentum that Ron has built up so far, He has to play ball and make nice with the Republican establishment machine so that they allow him to get stuff done in the Senate, allow him to speak, and that maybe some people will endorse him the next time it comes around, because endorsements really count.
I think his presidential ambitions is also why he's unwilling to follow his father's example in calling for an immediate end to the war and bringing our troops home.
Right, yeah. He will play nice and say, I want to get out as soon as possible, and I do not want an escalation except unless we're attacked, and I want declarations of war to come from Congress rather than unilaterally from the president. So he is sticking up for the Constitution, but he's not coming right out and saying that the war is a fraud like Ron Paul does.
So this year we had Ron Paul. I think in past elections we've had people like Dennis Kucinich or Ross Perot. And one of the questions I have is, if we're going to break out of this kind of duopoly, this corporate-controlled duopoly that keeps us in a situation of perpetual war, suppresses our civil rights, are we going to find a solution with an insurgent in one of the two major parties, or are we going to have to reinvent the wheel and create a third party?
That entirely depends. I mean, there's a equally 50-50 shot that it'll come out of one of the existing parties, or that it'll be a whole new party. More likely than not, I think it'll probably be a new party.
Well, the establishment Republicans did the best job that they could to co-opt their Tea Party and rein it back in so that now it's no more than just the periphery of the Republican Party,
right,
as if to call yourself a
conservative. It was really controlled from the very beginning when Rick Santella and CNBC News called for the formation of a Tea Party movement. And then it was immediately pushed by Fox. It was financed by the Koch brothers, these very conservative pro-business billionaires in the oil and gas, I think chemical industry.
Mm-hmm.
The website of the Tea Party, I believe, was run by Republican-tied public relations firm.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Army became the head of Freedom Works.
Yeah, right. Freedom Works International.
Yeah, this allied lobbying group. So it was really a controlled movement.
They jumped on it immediately. They said, we can't allow the Republican Party to fracture and turn into a third party. We can't lose membership. This machine has to keep rolling. And it's the exact same way that the Democrats run out and grab the liberals and the Greens and, you know, the socialists. They pull them all under the umbrella to keep their membership
ranks. They get co-opted.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, when I was so disappointed with Kucinich, who I'm a great admirer of him as well as Ron Paul. I like independent people in both parties. When he was co-opted by Obama on this Obamacare bill, which is
took a plane ride and changed his vote.
Exactly. Now he knows,
and still lost his seat.
People in Congress, and Democrats.
Will.
Yeah, he will lose his seat. They know that this country needs a national health system, a single payer system, and Obama won't. He took it off the table. It was never on the table. Obama is in the pocket of the insurance industry and the chemical and the pharmaceutical industry, just like Bush Jr. It's really no different.
None whatsoever.
And Kucinich, I think, what the heck? He lost. He's going to lose his seat anyway. He should have just. He should have said, to heck with you, you know, I'm going for national health. You don't want to put it on the table, I'll put it on the table. I won't let you ignore it.
I think part of the problem is that everybody fights on these one issues, but the problem is that we don't have a kind of a nationalist idea, you know, what is best for the nation, you know, not just what is best for my party, what is going to get me votes, what is best for the nation, what is the one issue that I can get people to grasp on, like, you know, Obama doing this thing with the illegal immigration, you know, it's going to win him the Latino vote. Well, instead, I mean, you should be reaching out to the Latinos as you're Americans too. That's what you should be voting on.
The big businesses control the agenda.
But that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
and that's
this nationalist viewpoint.
That's what
will
take the massive sea change, is if somebody came forward with a nationalist perspective saying, look, we're all not going to agree on the same things, but we have to agree that we have to do what's best for the nation.
If you'd like to join
the
conversation on In Context, we're on WPKN 89.5 FM. This show is called In Context. It's a live public affairs call-in show. And to join the conversation, our number is 203-336-9756. Feel free to discuss any of the subjects we've covered. If you've got any kind of related issue that's important to you, or you want to tell us about your own personal economic situation, or maybe your situation with your medical care or your health insurance that you have a problem problem with that and you have some insight that you could share with the other listeners, we'd be happy to hear from you. It's 203-336-9756. One important aspect of Obamacare and the mandate, which I think is going to maybe get ruled unconstitutional very shortly by the Supreme Court, has been dominating the news. This idea that everybody's got to buy health insurance sounds illegal to me or unconstitutional. But another very important aspect of it is to change the Medicaid rules. Now, although some people say, oh, private health insurance is the way to go. We have a great health care system in this country. Almost a third of all health care spending is from the government. We have a de facto national health care system. Medicare, Medicaid, it covers roughly 30% of the American population. And part of Obamacare is going to be a significant increase in the income limit. And according to a recent article in the New York Times, it will add 17 million new people to Medicaid, where they'll become eligible. And even then, the income limit is pretty low. I mean, we're talking, I think, under the new limit, about $25,000. Under the current limit, you can be pretty darn poor. You can be very working poor and not be able to qualify for Medicaid. And, of course, you can't afford private health insurance.
Right.
So I think this is if this gets through, it seems to me like it's an expensive backdoor way into national health. I say backdoor because so many more people will be covered. Maybe at some point people will say, hey, what the heck, half the people are now, maybe we'll have to have national health insurance.
But why would they do that when everyone's paying their way? Because the corporation insurance companies are going to be making so much money from this mandate for people to buy that they will never go
towards health care. If we keep going down the current system dominated by private insurance companies and pharmaceuticals, and we keep expanding Medicaid, we will go broke. Right now, we have over 17% of our GDP in health care. It's almost double what it is in countries like France, which people like the health care system. I think Frenchmen they're happier with it than we are with our system.
Mm-hmm.
If we keep going down this road without any cost controls, I mean, it's part of a major reason why we have this huge deficit.
You're going to see people being forced into the hospitals at bayonet point. They're going to say, you don't have health care? Well, get behind, you're going to get shot.
That's because, it's a crazy thing to mandate it without controlling costs.
And the absurdity I find is that people always say, oh, we have the best medical care system in the world, the best money can pay for, which means
if you're rich,
you're really rich and if you're really poor, you're taking care. But what I find an absurdity is that I was in Egypt for a considerable length of time, and I got all kinds of sick when I was there because I'm, a European going into a Middle Eastern country. Of course, things are going to make you sick. I got all sorts of medical treatment when I was there. I paid 2 Egyptian pounds, and the medication was free. Now, to give you just some perspective, it takes 6 Egyptian pounds to equal 1 American dollar. For £2, I was given great medical treatment. I was given better medical treatment than I have been given here. Every time I go to the doctors here, the doctor either treats me like, a piece of basically, butcher meat, just like assembly line, let me look at that. Oh, I don't really care. Move on. The Egyptian doctors, they cared. I got great medication. It cured me. I was able to drink the water there after taking this medication, and it was all fundamentally free.
Yeah.
And if this is a third world country who can do that, it is beyond stupid to believe that we can't do this in the first world
country.
Maybe
it's fundamentally a problem with American values that we're such a commercial people that we see everything, including social service like health care, as a profit mechanism. And maybe we can't do it. I mean, I'd like to think we could rise to the occasion and do it, but certainly we can't go down the current road where we have unbridled commercial greed on one side and government subsidies on the other side. It's totally unaffordable.
I think a lot of that stems from that. A lot of that's holdover from the Cold War era. Anything that's to the left of the Democratic Party is socialist and communist and therefore bad. And I think it's something that scarred the American psyche from the Cold War. We do not like the idea of, big government or government doing, anything because it's too socialist. What we think is big.
Yeah.
But the fact is, though, is that, before the Cold War, medicine was cheap. Your local doctor who lived down the street was relatively inexpensive.
Well, this is what Ron Paul says. You get rid of, I don't know if this will work, but he says, you get rid of, Medicare, Medicaid, and prices, they will drop a lot. But then the problem is, what do you do for those people who have a catastrophic illness?
Well, the prices will drop so much that you'll have only a few people uninsured at that point. And then, he believes that the charity organizations and the church church hospitals will take over to fill that gap where the government. How many illegal immigrants right now are getting free health care from
Even if you took that out, I just wonder if I needed a quadruple somebody needs a quadruple heart bypass mm-hmm. and it's going to cost whatever umpteen dollars that you want to rely on charity.
But wait, you're saying that would be the bottom 5% of income earners that would need that quadruple bypass?
No, I don't. No, I'm saying the average middle class person. I mean, I think it's about this first or second cause of bankruptcy in the United States.
Yeah, healthcare.
It's healthcare. And I'm saying catastrophe.
But don't forget that the cost of these procedures is so hyperinflated because of insurance.
It's true.
Right?
I think you'd still have a serious problem.
This is my philosophy. You don't pay for your fire department. You don't pay for your police department. You shouldn't have to pay for your EMS or for your doctors. It's a basic human right, and it should be a basic human right.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
Well,
I'm inclined to Marshawn's view. Well, you go ahead and make your case there.
Well, I don't think that a service provided by somebody else is a right. You cannot define a right as something that someone else has to provide for you. It's just not logical. I know that it sounds like everyone deserves it because it's about decency and it's about humanity, and you know you obviously need health care in order to be to have a full life. But if you look at the way things used to be before, the doctor profession was a really highly profitable profession. People mostly took care of themselves.
But when I read like 19th century books, I feel often you'll see families impoverished because the father got sick. It's a very common phenomenon in an industrial country. Do we have a caller?
We do, actually. This is Stephen from Bridgeport. Go ahead, Stephen. You're on the air with WPKN.
Hi, Stephen.
Hello, my name is Stephen. I am from Bridgeport, longtime listener, and I also happen to be a self-employed individual, you know, running on no health care, like millions of other people in our country. Although I don't have any fixes for the healthcare situation by any means, but one thing I would like to see happen is I would like to see the insurance companies stop spending our money on the trading floor. Instead of trading our Medicare money, let's put it towards medical. Our money should not be be traded openly. That's what the insurance companies are doing.
Could you explain that?
Well, they're taking out the money that we spend. The insurance company, they take it and invest it in stocks. So they can make more money.
And this is money that ultimately is coming from our government through Medicare.
Well, wherever it comes from, the healthcare needs to be removed from the trading, from the stock room floor.
Yeah. Would you feel?
Imagine rather than spending my $600 a month, if I had healthcare, paying an insurance company, what if I just gave that directly to my local hospital or my local healthcare provider, whoever that may be?
What do you think of the idea of a single payer system? Eliminate all these private insurance companies and just have.
I couldn't agree more. Actually, what I'd like to see happen is my state take over my health and my money go to one big pool that pays all the hospitals and everybody else.
As long as we have fair competition and choice in the matter, the last thing I would want is for the state to say that certain natural procedures are not eligible to be covered.
Well, certainly agreed. I mean, within reason that our health care is still our own responsibility. But I just think about all the money that me and other friends of mine who are self-employed, own small businesses, and what they ask from us.
Right.
Thousands of dollars. And I'm thinking, my God, what if I just gave that to the hospital? What if I went to the hospital and said, listen, I'll give you $300 a month. Just take care of me when I come here.
Stephen, just to be clear, do you have health insurance through your own business?
Of course I do not.
You do not. So what? How does that affect?
Very short period of time when I first became self-employed. I tried, but it just didn't. Worthless.
How does that affect your?
I agree.
A lot of people say, "Oh, that doesn't matter because people without insurance they just go to the doctor or the hospital anyway, and somebody else picks it up." I mean, does it affect how often you go to the doctor? Do you put off?
Yeah, of course. I don't go now for things that I probably should be going for. I just, you know, say, well, let's see how things go, and unless it truly makes me feel bad on a daily basis, it's not a problem.
Do you find that when you do go, I've had this experience when I was uninsured, that they actually charge me more than if I had been insured?
I will say this: in the few times I've had to take my wife to the hospital, the last year she had to go to the hospital, and I was able to get it covered by the state by going to stand in line and wait the 6 or 8 months and go fill out all the paperwork.
I see.
They got paid for it, and they also paid for the blood work and everything. But I got to tell you, I now, for my health care, use the local Southwest clinics, and they adjust due to mine and my wife's income. So
I see.
She pays like $15. I pay like $20 for an office visit.
I see.
Okay.
Now, the other thing I find is that these doctors at the clinics, for some reason, seemed to care so much more than the doctor that I was paying $150 a week through my regular insurance.
That's a good point. Yeah, if you're going for insurance, they give you about 6 minutes.
He could have cared less about me. Matter of fact, here's one for you, not to go on, but when my doctor, my regular doctor, who I had for 15 years I had this doctor.
Mm-hmm.
When he found out I didn't have health care, and I had to start paying him out of my own pocket and stuff like that, and I had a problem making a payment, and I got a letter saying, if you don't pay this $120-some that you owe us, we won't be able to provide you with any more health care.
Wow.
And so I called them, and I said, listen, I'll make the payment, you know, I'll get you some money. They're like, okay, no problem. Well, they said, well, what have you been doing for doctors since you haven't seen us so long? Well, I said, we're going to the Southwest Clinic. Next thing I know, I get a letter that I'm no longer going to. I'm no longer one of their patients anymore.
Well, I'm glad at least you get it, you and your wife are
very
getting
thoughtful.
Some care. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Thanks very
appreciate
much.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, sorry to ramble on.
No,
we really appreciate your calling. That's great. Thanks.
How we're treated, but the local clinics, the doctors are wonderful.
That's great
to
hear.
Absolutely wonderful.
That's good advice.
You have a great day, guys.
Thank you.
You too, Stephen. We're just going to be on for another 5 minutes. You're listening to In Context, a live public affairs call-in show on WPKN. We're just going to be on for another 5 minutes. So if you want to get a call-in before we're off the air, the number is 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. We've been talking about a wide variety of subjects, going from the banking crisis, unemployment, to healthcare. If you have anything you want to share with us, share with the listeners on those issues or related issues, please feel free to give us a call in the next few minutes before we end the show.
See, I think that the whole issue with healthcare comes down to the inflated cost of the procedures. So, you know, one of the things that we talk about a lot is cancer care. You know, we did a special on that a while back with the show where we did a special on Outsmart Your Cancer, and the author, Tanya Harder Pierce. And, you know, she was talking about how the unfair playing field for cancer care, where they are helping the chemo and radiation experimentations, which is really what it is. It's an experimentation. They don't, you know, it's not proved that it works. It's not a cure. It's not, you know, it will get you by and maybe just keep you alive for a little longer, but it destroys the rest of your body at the same time. When there are many, many non-toxic treatments that need to be experimented with and fully explored.
Absolutely.
That
yeah.
will not kill you.
It's more than just the money side.
Like
it's
Dr. Brzezinski in
it's
Texas.
It's how to practice medicine side.
Exactly. And so these much more expensive and toxic procedures are pushed on people to make them think that they have no other option or choice.
Of course.
And the insurance companies pay hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, for cancer care through radiation and chemo, when it's really just killing you and
it's
making you sick.
$100 billion industry.
And it always has a relapse.
And we have a caller. This is Dan from Shelton. Go ahead, Dan. You're on the air with WPKN.
Hi, Dan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
My comment would be, as long as we have a for-profit health insurance program, there's no way to solve that, because the for-profit health insurance companies, their main objective is to make money, which means they're always going to want to charge you as high a premium as they can, and their cost of their product is your health care.
Mm-hmm.
So they're always going to try to minimize the health care that's provided to you.
Sure.
Sure.
And to make that work, I mean, you're just not going to make that work. Single payer, in my opinion, is the only way that we're going to get ourselves out of this bind.
And that seems to be the consensus.
But it never seems to get on the table, which
right.
is Dennis Kucinich asked that at a debate, and he gave the answer. He says, it's because when I bring it up, he said the insurance companies tell everybody else in the Democratic Party, we can't talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, there's going to be a lot of resistance, but I mean, that's got to be the long-term goal. I think Obama's health care reforms are a step in the right direction, and to keep it on the forefront of people's minds. I think if people just there's so much info, but if you, in my mind, I boil it down for myself as long as my health care provider is a for-profit insurance company, he's going to keep my premium as high as he can, and he's going to keep my coverage as low as he can.
Yeah, I think you're right, Dan.
It's true. Yeah, I agree.
But where are you going with that?
Yeah, thanks so much for calling, Dan. Appreciate your sharing your viewpoint on that.
Thanks very much, Dan.
Thanks for taking the call.
Of course. Thank you.
So we're coming to the end of the show, but I do want to remind listeners that Gus and Marshawn and I will be appearing at the Ridgefield Community Center on Wednesday, June the 27th at 7:30 p.m. to lead a discussion of with the audience of American foreign policy and the corporate takeover of our government. And that will be following a free performance of my play, Mark Twain versus the Imperialists, which is based upon Mark Twain's political writings during the last 10 years of his life, the dawn of the American empire.
And we have a good cast to perform it, too.
And the doors will open at 7. We'll have free refreshments before and after the performance so that people can mingle and talk to Gus and Marchand and I about public affairs issues that concern them.
Oh, can I throw one more piece of news there to close off the show? There's a headline here that says, Obama plays golf for the 100th time of his presidency, and his 4 years aren't even over yet. And by comparison, I've played golf 3 times in the past 4 years, and I don't even have enough time to get away to take more than 3 days off at one time because I work so hard. And this guy's leading the free world.
It's good to be the king.
This is an insult.
It's good to be king.
This is an insult to me.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that's it for In Context. You can find you can find us on Facebook at In Context. Look up our website at incontextreport.com and find us on YouTube too.
YouTube.com/incontextreport.
All right. And see you next week.
Next for the War Report, and we're going to do an in-depth analysis of what's going on in Syria and this possible confrontation with Russia.
And let's go out at noon with Won't Get Fooled Again.
See you next time. We'll be right back.